Hello and welcome to this course on magic messaging, how to develop your 6-second message that captivates potential architecture clients. I'm Enoch Sears, founder of Business of Architecture, and the instructor for today's course is Richard Petrie. A marketer, sales trainer, and former police hostage negotiation trainer, Richard Petrie is known as the world's leading architect marketing and sales coach. He's worked with dozens of architects in multiple nations around the world. He leads the training inside of the Architects Marketing Academy, a marketing and sales training course founded by Richard along with Eric Bobrow and myself. Richard's training and strategies help architects win and keep more of the kinds of projects they want to work on. To get a certificate of completion for this course, fill out the quiz that you'll find on this page and email it to support@businessofarchitecture.com. In this course, you'll gain an understanding of how the mind works and why traditional communication doesn't work when trying to get the attention of your potential architecture clients. This course was originally recorded as part of the Business of Architecture Summit in 2015. And with that, here's our presenter, Richard Petrie.
Well, just to whet your appetite, I suppose, when I teach this to people, it's not uncommon that they then go away and apply it very quickly and get immediate results when they're talking to clients. It happens all the time because this is a much more effective way of communicating with people, the way I'm going to show you. And the beauty is it's so simple. So here's another guy, Zeke, who his fee was double other architects' proposals, but the way he connected with them, the way he put it across using this sort of approach, he was able to charge double the fee and still get accepted. Okay, so what I want you to do is imagine you're trying to sell your services in a foreign land. And it's a land where nobody really understands what you're saying. You know, despite the fact that you may have superhuman powers at what you do, no one gets your superhuman powers. And I'm going to put it to you that it's a little bit like that for most architects, even very, very good architects, that how do we really understand how good an architect, you know, I'm talking about the you know, someone who's hiring you, whether even if it's a commercial architect or a residential, how do they really know how good you are unless they're highly experienced? And I'm going to put it to you that most of the people who hire architects aren't overly experienced. And the answer is they don't really know. They don't really know how good you are. And that's the problem. You know, you would have thought that just doing great work would have been enough to guarantee the projects keep rolling in, rolling and rolling in. But I know working with hundreds of architects, that's not the case. So if you think that you're doing great work and you're surprised you're not getting more referrals and more work, rest assured you're in very good company. We need a way to bridge that gap of, you know, it's not about just unfortunately it's not about just doing good work. Okay, we need more than that. We need to communicate better. So how does this apply to architecture? Well, when it comes to selling services, you know, what you've got to understand is I believe there's two languages, and it's really amazing because I'll just take you through this. There's two languages. There's the seller's language, how we tend to talk when we're selling things, our services or anything, and then there's the client language. Now, you would think, you know, well, firstly, the first point is there are two different languages. There are two different ways of thinking. And even me, even though I teach this, I slip sometimes into seller's language when I'm selling my services. And I'm always catching myself, and I've been teaching this for years, and yet, I it's what we do. We jump into it, and I even know it. So what chance have you got if you don't even know this stuff? What chance have you got but talking like a seller as opposed to a client? So I'm going to show you the two different languages. They're very, very simple, but very subtle. And the irony is you think that we would all be good at the client language because we all buy so much. You know, we buy more than we earn usually. Most people are running at a sort of at least cash neutral basis, if not cash loss. So we're spending more money buying than we're actually bringing in the door. You'd think we'd be good because if we use the same psychology we use to buy when we're selling, you'd think that would be perfect. But the irony is we don't do that. So I'm sort of going to explain it. And part of the problem you have as an architect, like anyone selling sort of complex professional services, is you know too much. Okay, and I'm sure that if you've got a spouse and they've listened to you talk to clients, I bet at some point your spouse has said, look, what you're saying is too complicated. They won't understand that because I don't understand it, and I'm your wife or I'm your husband and I don't understand it. And I've listened to it for the last 10 years, you know. So you know too much, and that is part of your problem. That's why it makes it hard for you to talk like a buyer, because we need to dumb it right down. And as an expert, the last thing I ever want to do is teach people to suck eggs or you know, try and say things. And I almost feel like I'm going to humiliate them by dumbing it down too much. But in actual case, it's more than likely it's still too complex for people. So seldom do I dumb it down so much that people are offended. That doesn't normally happen. What normally happens is, as professionals, we don't dumb it down nearly enough, and it just goes over people's heads. We start talking technical details, and it's too much for them to take in. They get to a point where they're overloaded and they can't even hear it. They start looking at the colour of your teeth and your haircut and the shirt you're wearing and just nodding their head. Okay, so, you know, because as a client, you know, we're at the stage of trying to understand what concept drawings are, a lot of us, right? You're talking about BIM and, you know, sustainable design and a lot of other fancy bits and pieces. And we're, you know, what is a concept design? I mean, it took me 3 months to learn to spell the word architecture. Seriously. You know, that's the level I was at for 3 months. And I was working with architects, helping them sell. But, you know, this is the problem. You guys are smart. And I say guys and girls, you're smart. And you've taken so long to study this thing that you know it inside out. So that is a problem. That's what I'm saying is it is a problem when it comes to selling. We are stuck at that stage. All right, we need translation. We need you not to assume that we know what you're talking about. We need you to break it down into its most simple elements. All right, so here's a story, and this is a story about my wife. She said, all right, we want a car. She likes to go skiing. I don't particularly, but she's taught the kids to like it as well, so I guess we go skiing. You know, happy wife, happy life. So anyway, she says we need a four-wheel drive. We had one before, but we need a new car. So we want, what's the criteria? Okay, we want four-wheel drive, less than 3 years old, under 40,000, or around, you know what it's like, under 40,000 or just a little bit over. Seven seats. These are all the logical, these are all logical criteria. So a friend of mine who's better at cars than I am says, I found one for you. Here it is here. It's perfect. It's four-wheel drive, less than 3 years old. It was about $40,000, seven seats. And according to the criteria she had given, perfect, right? Wrong. She didn't want it. It ticked all the boxes. She didn't want it. Why not? Because it was the wrong color. She didn't like the color. Well, hang on, that wasn't on the criteria list, right? So what I'm saying here is people will give you a logical set of criteria, but what's happening? When it comes to it, something will change, something will overpower. So here's a write-downer. People buy an emotion and justify with logic. So have a think about this with your clients, and I don't care whether it's some of you commercial architects sitting there thinking, oh, this doesn't apply to me. You know, I'm commercial architects. My clients are all serious and highly skilled. Absolute rubbish. Absolute rubbish. You know, commercial clients are driven by emotion just as much. You know, they want to look good to their boss. They are scared of risk. You know, these are all emotional. They want the project to finish on time and on budget. That's as much of an emotional thing if you think about the consequences of not. They're thinking about the emotional consequences of not finishing on time and on budget. Like I said before, they want to look good. You know, if they can do a good project on this, they might get a promotion. Well, they're not going to tell you that. That's emotional. That's hidden behind the surface. But it is emotion. Okay? Right. So most architects sell using logic. So let me explain. This is if you're worried that this is going to get complex, don't worry. You know, what you do in architecture is far more complicated and clever than what I teach in sales and marketing. This is a three-step formula. This is really simple. So even if you said to yourself the last 20 years I'm terrible at selling, don't worry about it. You know, within the next 30 minutes I'll teach you how to be really seriously really good using this three-step process. So most architects sell using logic. Very good. Let's have a look. Here's how the architect might talk, and this is sort of the seller language I was talking before. You might talk about, I've had 25 years experience. I've got all these qualifications. I've got BIM and ZIM and WOW and all these other things that the clients don't understand or appreciate. You might talk about how you've done 15 projects similar to theirs. That's another good logic. These are all logical arguments as to why you're good. We'll do concept drawings, working drawings, construction documentation, da la la. That is all seller talk. That is all features. These are what you do. It's not buyer language. So what the client's thinking, that doesn't mean a lot. That doesn't have a lot of cut through. The beauty with me teaching architects is I am a little bit dumb. I'm not the sharpest cookie in the world. So when I hear all them talking, I know that it's too much, right? What the client's thinking is I really don't understand a word you're saying. You know, how do you spell architecture again? Right? Even commercial clients. So let's take a lesson of communication. If that's not the way to do it, let's have a look at what the greats do. So we've got JFK, we've got Muhammad Ali, Winston Churchill. It's a pity they're all Americans, aren't they, apart from Winston Churchill. We need more of a worldwide spread here. But and we've got the final one is I Have a Dream, Martin Luther King. So what do they do? What do they do? And you know, would you agree that these people are highly effective communicators, highly effective influencers and persuaders, highly effective motivators? Definitely. They went from beyond just influencing themselves, they ended up influencing the whole world. And we still talk about them. We still use their quotes to motivate each other. And you know, the way they spoke, there was something magical about what they did. And if we can work out the DNA of what they were doing, is there something simple they were all doing that had a profound effect on people's brains and forced them to take action? So, for example, Winston Churchill didn't say, if he was using seller language or being logical, he didn't say we use 30,000 soldiers, 1,000 aircraft, 123 ships to fight the Germans until we lose or win or lose, and at that point we'll reassess the situation. He didn't say that, because that's just listing a bunch of facts, features, logical. That's what we're going to do. What he did was he said, we'll fight them on the beaches, we'll fight them on the landing grounds, we'll fight them in the air, and 1,000 years from now, they will look back and they will say this was their finest hour. Wow. Now, that's a little bit different. In 1,000 years from now, they will look back and say this was their finest hour. Wow. Now, I don't know if you can feel the difference between that and that. Can you feel a difference between the two? Because if you can feel a difference, then you'll start to understand what I'm talking about. In 1,000 years from now, they will look back and say this was their finest hour. It's a difference between saying here's what we're going to do and here's how we're going to shape history and we're going to be part of it. All right, Norman Foster. Now, I don't know Norman Foster but he speaks differently. He doesn't use the traditional logical architect speak. He speaks in visions and in dreams and emotions. So let's break this down. There's two keys to communication. Number one, people buy an emotion and justify with logic. People buy an emotion and justify with logic. So if that's the case, we need to reshape our talking and our communication to be front-end loaded with emotion. We need to include logic, but we need to front-end it with emotion. Point number two, people buy stories. Okay, so people buy an emotion and they buy stories. And the stories, so stories are the things that we need. And these stories need to be embedded with emotion. Now, I bet you do this sometimes. I bet you've had experiences where you've been brilliant. You know, you've inspired some clients and they've gone, we must hire you, and it's gone brilliantly well. And I bet at other times, you've sat down with clients and you know you've just missed the mark. They're, you haven't made a connection for some reason, even though you knew that you were the best person for the job or you could have done a job for them that they would have been really happy with. They ended up going with someone else. And you walked away thinking, darn it, you know, what was I missing? What was I missing? So we're going to deconstruct that very simply by using this three-step formula, called the FAB formula, and you'll see why in a minute. Not the Fab Four, the Fab Formula. I think, well, obviously the British would know that one, but I don't know. Would the Americans know the Fab Four, Enoch? If Enoch's there, he's probably taken the opportunity to go and have a break while I'm talking. All right, we'll carry
Apparently
on.
he
So
did.
Fab,
No, I am.
eh?
I just have my line muted so that I don't have any echo. The
All
Fab
right.
Four. No, sorry, lost me.
You don't. No, okay. The Fab Four are the Beatles. Fab Four, yep. But just a wee sidetrack there, just for entertainment purposes only. So what we need to know is FAB. Let's have a look. F stands for features. Okay? F for features. A stands for advantages. And B stands for benefits. Sorry, while Enoch was talking, I thought he was going to talk about more, and I've just taken a big bite of banana. So that's FAB. Let's have a look at the simple little formula. So like I say, if you've just got a pen, you can get a piece of paper and just draw this graph out. So features is what the thing is. Okay? Advantages is what the thing does. So if we talk about, maybe we talk about BIM or sustainable design, what it is. It's BIM. What it does, whatever it does, I'm not 100% sure. And then benefits is the potential transformation that feature doing that certain thing can deliver. Okay? What it is, feature, advantage, benefit. Let's have a look. Let's have a look for a car. So let's say you're buying a car. A feature of buying a car might be the ear pads or the airbag, okay, that are deployed on impact. So the feature is airbag safety system. Okay, what's the advantage? The advantage is, here's, remember this is what it does. In case of a crash, it automatically deploys cushioning. That's the advantage. The benefit, what's the benefit of something deploying automatically on impact? Well, saves your life. Saves your life. Okay, those are the three categories that you need to be aware of. And what I'd like you to do, if you really want to get good at this, and it doesn't take long to do, it's a simple little exercise. But ultimately, I want you to list down all the features that you do as an architect, or that all the features you have and do, and list them on a piece of paper. And then you're going to do this exercise on it. All right, so let's have a look. Break it down. Feature was the airbag. It's what it is. The advantage is what it does. Remember, it deploys on impact. And the benefit is the transformation, saves your life. So I've got a question here for you. Which end is the logical end? And which end is the emotional end? Okay, so I can't see my control panel, and I won't get you to type in. Normally I would get a bit more engagement, but we won't have engagement on this one. We'll just have me talking. It's a lot faster. Right, so the logical end is the features end. It's what it is. It's just logical. And what it does is kind of logical as well. Okay, so the airbags is logical. Opens on impact. That's what it does. Saves your life. Okay, so the emotional side is that side. Now remember we said earlier, people buy an emotion, justify with logic. Now, if you look at those three things, airbag, opens on impact, saves your life, which one's the most emotional? Obviously, saves your life. Okay, people buy an emotion, justify with logic. Which end should we front-end load, do you think? Right? Well, let's have a look. We'll keep going. People buy an emotion, justify with logic. Okay, FAB, logic, emotion. The benefit is the emotional side. Now, notice that, the save your life bit didn't come in the user manual. That's something that we had to add into it. And it's the same with all your features of all the things you do. You do concept drawings, you do sketches, you do site visits maybe, you do free consultation maybe. These are all features, okay? These features don't automatically come with a story, an emotional story at the end of them, do they? You have to add that piece of magic, okay? All right, so how can FAB be applied to architecture? Let's have a look at an example. All right, let's look at sustainable design. That's what it is, right? Doesn't come with any story, I do sustainable design. There's no story that gets given with it when you get learned taught that at university. What does it do? Uses low impact materials. That's one thing it does. That's the advantage. We lose low impact materials. What's the benefit? Okay, the benefit could be, and there could be a million different benefits, but one of them could be you get to feel you're making a contribution to the world. You're at least, you're making a contribution to the world by not excessively damaging it any more than we need to. Right? That's the emotional side. Now, for people who want sustainable design, that's one of the type of ways they might think about it. Right? I don't want to cause a big environment, I don't want to cause a big footprint. I don't want to mess up this world. I want to be able to build in a way that doesn't impact the world, enhances it and connects with that type of thing. Okay, let's have another example. Sustainable design reduces heating costs. That could be another advantage. Okay, what's the benefit there? The benefit there is that once you've got through the upfront costs, sometimes there are no upfront costs, are there? If you're a good architect, sometimes you can do it for a similar price or close. But once you've paid off your investment, you can use that money to pay off your children's university fees. Okay, rather than have that money going to the heating company, it could be going into your university fund. Now, can you see? There's a little bit of a stretch there because it requires a little bit of storytelling. It requires a little bit of creative. Now, is it true? Yes, it is true. You could use the money. You could save money, and you could put it towards a university fund. So we're not making anything up. It is true. So we don't tell lies here, but it does require that stretch of imagination and to transform sustainable design into it's going to be better for your kids. Okay, and you can say it with a smile on your face and all that type of stuff, but that's the type of thing, that's what I'm talking about here, the benefits. Okay, let's go on. BIM. What are the advantages? 3D modeling helps you make more informed decisions earlier before it gets expensive. Right? The benefits. You're more likely to finish on time and on budget. And if you're a commercial client, if we can finish this under budget and faster because we've used 3D modeling, then the other, outline quotes that you've had from other architect firms, you're going to look really good. This is the type of stuff that gets people promoted. The last client I spoke, I dealt with, we used BIM modeling. We got finished on time and on budget. It's the first project in 2 years that had finished on time and on budget, and that guy came out of the project smelling roses, and then he got a promotion. Now, the benefits is the story. You're sowing the seed of what could happen, and it could happen. Okay, that's the money side. So the benefit story. So just when you're thinking of when you come at the benefit side is the powerful thing, but it needs to link back to something, factual. It needs to link back to your feature. So there's two ways you can go with your benefit story. It can either be made to gain pleasure. Let's say you're more likely to get a promotion, or it can go to avoiding pain. Avoiding pain is if this project doesn't go well, it reflects badly on you, and you can end up under all sorts of stress and pressure. But if you use BIM, it's really an insurance policy and reducing risk and improving the decision making. So your chances of getting caught out on this project are reduced. Okay, so on the benefit side, it's about how life will be better or you can avoid the bad situations. All right, let me give you an example. Feature. Now, a friend of mine had a block wall that looked a bit like this, and then around the outside, well, didn't have this wire cage around the outside. So he was he's quite a well-known cricketer in New Zealand. He was a captain in the New Zealand cricket team. But anyway, he had this. I said, oh, I went around to his house one day. I said, gee, I like your wall, and I even think the cage around the outside looks good. He said, oh, we didn't really want the cage around the outside. The council forced us to put it on. I said, oh, really? Did they? How'd they do that? And he said, I'm not even sure legally they had to. I was required to. I said, well, what happened? He said, oh, the council guys were really good. They were very persuasive. I said, what happened? He said, all right. He said, well, they came around, and the first guy came around, looked at my wall, and says, you won't need any netting around or cage around the outside of your blocks. They should be fine. So we got a permit to build the wall without the cage. Then a week later, the same guy rang up and said, oh, I've changed my mind. You do need one. Right? And Stephen said, oh, you've already, you know, I've already got the permit, or you've already sent me the letter saying it's fine to build without it. And he said, I'll tell you what, can I bring my boss around and have a look at it? So Stephen said, all right, okay. So anyway, three people came around, the boss, someone else, and the original person who had passed the wall. Came around the house, they had a look. And they came to Stephen at the end and said, oh, yeah, you've got to put a netting on it. And Stephen said, you've already told me, I've already got your letter saying I don't need it. I've already got the permit. And one of the guys who obviously understood FAB, he didn't hit him with the features of, you know, you need to put it on because it will protect the wall, which is where most people get to. That's the length. They do feature, advantage, and they never go to benefit. Okay, so an average person would have just said, look, you need the netting. What it'll do is secure the wall. You need it. You know, that's it. He didn't say that. He jumped straight to the benefit. He said, listen. Stephen said, listen, I'll take you to court over this. I've already got the letter saying I can do it. And the guy from the council, the boss, said, listen, you could take us to court and you may even win. Right? He said, but would that make you feel any better if this thing falls over and lands on one of your kids? Boom. Boom. Right? And I said, and what'd you do? He said, oh, what could I do? Well, you know, we had to put the cage on. I said, well, do you think you had to? He said, oh, no, no. He said, I probably would, you know, probably win in court. But once he said that, what can you do? And that's the power of using sort of emotional-driven stories, which are effectively benefits. It's the transformation of how your life can turn for the better or for the worse. That's the money shot. That's the gold. If you're trying to influence people, look at Winston Churchill and Martin Luther King and Muhammad Ali. They told stories. You know, I have a dream. I have a dream that one day people will rise up and live out the true meaning of their creed. And he goes on and tells a story. Winston Churchill told his emotional stories. Muhammad Ali told poems and told, you know, visual stories. Short. They're only short, but they're emotional. And as soon as you hear them, you're moved by them. Just like the council guy moved Stephen. Quick as that. Another friend, I was explaining this to some army recruitment officers, and one of the guys came up to me at the end of the session and said, yeah, he said, oh, you know, it's so true what you said about, you know, influencing people with emotional stories, the benefits. He said, my son did this to me recently. I said, oh, you know, because I always love a good example. I said, what happened? He said, well, my son, you know, who was 16, said he wanted a motorbike. And he said, I'm into motorbikes, I love them, but I didn't want my son to have one because they can be dangerous. And, you know, and he'd been bugging for me for 6 months and said, look, Dad, can I get a motorbike? You know, I want a motorbike. You know, you've got a motorbike. Can I have a motorbike? You know, can I have one as well? And he'd be going, no, 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 because the son had been delivering features. You know, what I want is the motorbike, and then I can go out riding. He never got to the benefit stage. And I said to him, well, you know, obviously something changed. What changed? And the guy said, who was in the army, he said he came up to me one day and he said, Dad, you know, I've been asking for a motorbike for about 6 months. And you've been saying no. He said, the only reason I want a motorbike is so that me and you can go out riding on the weekends. And I said, wow, that's cool. I said, what'd you say? He said, oh, I just say yes. So he got his motorbike because he changed the story. He converted it from what I want and the features into an emotional benefit. You know, it's a me and you thing, Dad. I just want to hang out with you on the weekends. And that changed everything instantly. Okay, the brick wall falling on the kids, the emotional story changed things instantly, not... You know, Enoch at the start said a 6 minute thing that will change, you know, change the way you communicate. It's not 6 minutes, it's actually 6 seconds. You know, you can tell your story in 6 seconds. All defenses get obliterated if you've got the right story. Okay, so I guess the exercise for you is for you to list down what are your features, what are the things you do? Is it sustainable design? Is it BIM? Is it concept drawings? Is it, you know, project documentation, all the things that you do that you think are features and worthy of noting. And then beside each of them, I want you to write out what it does. Okay? And then finally, I want you to come up with some benefits. And probably you could have two or three advantages, and you could probably have seven or eight benefits, but you don't need them. You know, just come up with at least one advantage and one benefit for each feature that you've got. And then what you do is when you're talking to people, you lead with the benefit, right? And if they want details on it, you can reverse back to the feature. You don't start with the feature, you end with the feature. I think I've got some examples. So wire mesh is the feature, secures the rocks, saves a child's life. He didn't start with wire mesh. He started with save a child's life and worked, you know, and we didn't even need to go to the secure rocks wire mesh. You know, when you've got a good benefit, you don't even need to reverse back. We all know you're talking about wire mesh. All right? So FAB is how you deconstruct what it is you do and you break it down. BAF is really how you talk about it. Okay, so simple, isn't it? Three steps. Transformational. Okay, so you might say, you know, look, you might say 70% of projects, let me give you an example. You might say 70% of projects go over time and over budget. That's the number I got given from some research somewhere. So you tell someone, look, 70% of projects go over time and over budget. How important is it for you to finish this project on time and on budget? Well, they're going to say very important. Okay, what we need to do then is we need to eliminate all the assumptions that go with the project. Would you agree with that? If we can reduce the assumptions, then we get more certainty around what's happening. Yes, I'd agree with that. Okay, what we need then is a pre-design options review service. That's what I run. It's designed to help people stack the odds of getting them on time and on budget because we reduce the assumptions. Okay, it makes sense. Let's do it. It's like an insurance policy. Right, it's like, you know, buying an insurance policy and stacking the odds in your favor. Would you like the odds stacked in your favor? Yes, please. Right, we need to do an options review before we start any concept drawings. Okay, great. How much is that? 750. Great. Okay, let's go. Can you see that? We've reversed back. Another way of doing this, if you're just trying to work out, you know, going FAB is where we list them all out, and I think you should do that. It's great, but it's us breaking down all our various features. And just another little advanced way you can do it is go ask them, what's most important to you about this project and why? They'll give you an answer. Now, what the answer they give you, guess what it's going to be? Probably an emotional story. Are you thinking what I'm thinking here? An emotional story. They're giving you the benefit. They're giving you the benefit. Then what you do is you take the emotional story they've given you and you reverse it back to your feature. Therefore, you'll need this. Therefore, to get that, we're going to need to do BIM or whatever else. We're going to do this thing called BIM. And it's been designed to give people who tell me that story that result. Hopefully, you can see that. I'd like, by the way, as we're doing this, we're almost done here. So if you've got questions, I would love to hear any examples of how people have done it without even understanding the process, you know, any good stories they might have used that has a great impact, or if you've got any questions. So have a think about that, and by all means, put them in the chat window because we're almost done here. I really want to keep it at a very simple level because we're pretty much done. So I'll just give a couple of other, you know, these are sort of more advanced thinking on this topic, but really you just need to know FAB. But Kevin Roberts said the whole of advertising has got it wrong because they're asking what do you want instead of asking how do you want to feel. So that, once again, that benefit thing is an emotional thing. Emotional is how someone wants to feel. Okay, so your story, if you're telling a story and you've constructed it yourself based on what you think, it's good. But it's way better if you're asking them how do you want to feel. So let's have a little look at that. One final example. What you want them to do is get that feeling that they're going to love the house that you've designed. Or, you know, you want them to love their house, and you want them to link that to your design, or your house or the space, the commercial space. You want them to think the commercial space links to your design, which is the feature. So let's have a look. Architect Day, this would be for residential architects, but it would work just as well for commercial. Architect Day walks into a potential client's home outlines his training, his experience, and his firm's portfolio, hoping to win the job. So it's sort of standard approach. The meeting finishes after 60 minutes. Architect A, technically speaking, is the best person for the job. Logically speaking, is the best person for the job. Architect B is the next to have a meeting. Now, Architect B, maybe not the best technical person for the job, but they understand the FAB formula. They understand magic messaging. They walk in, look at the same home, looks the wife in the eyes and says, have you ever walked into a home and had your heart go, wow, this place is amazing. I love the feel of the place. I wish I could live in a place like that. Have you ever walked into someone's house and felt that way? And what's the wife going to say? Everybody's walked into a house where they've gone, wow, I would love to live in a place like that. So Architect B is very clever. Architect B says very quickly, well, I want to design a house for you that makes you feel that way every single day for the rest of your life. Wow. So you know how you felt good when you walked into someone's house? Would you like to feel that way every single day when you walk into your house? And she looks at her husband and goes, yes, I would, honey. And I don't care what it costs. And the husband's going, oh, yeah, but. And the wife, you know how the wife, she wants it. She wants it. So that's a wee example of the B. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Now, if you've got any questions, I'm more than happy to answer any questions or listen to any comments you have or any stories you might have if this is a good chance to do it. But this concludes the AIA portion of the training. We can move into Q&A now if anyone's got any. Enoch, you back there?
I'm here, So Thanks, Richard, for that. You know, when you were presenting this, it was really bringing back Melissa Galt's presentation from earlier today. I know you missed it, but she really talked about how to charge more by helping the client see the vision of what they want.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Helping them see the value and having that capture that vision. So this really plays well into, look, if you, you know, a bunch of people were asking, okay, well, how do I get my clients to see that vision? How do I get them to really understand what they want? I mean, Richard just pretty much laid it out for us right here, how to do that. Any questions? Please drop your questions in there. We have Richard on the line for a few more minutes here. And while you're dropping in your questions, I did talk to Richard ahead of time, and we arranged you guys a special discount on his full Petrie Method training course, which is a $1,000 training course. It was recorded earlier this year in Las Vegas. I was there. Eric was there. Richard was there. We had 40 architects there over several days, and we hired a professional videographer to come in and to record all the training sessions. So what Richard presented was a condensed version of one of those sessions, and the entire two-day event basically focused on how to use your languaging and your client attraction skills to get those dream clients, to get those higher fees that we've been learning about here. Right. Richard, do you want to tell them a little bit more just about the Petrie Method? And and then, of course, we worked out a pretty good discount that they'll give them a huge discount on that since they are here at the summit.
Yeah, sure. So the Petrie Method is really just selling skills for architects. So it's custom designed for architects. If you, what you've learned today will help. If you're the type of person who just wants more, you know, you love that type of stuff. You know that it's a bit of a hole in what you're doing, and you can see from what we've covered today that you'd like a bit more. I think we've got this down to something like $300 or something like that. Like I say, we sell it for $1,000. So if you're interested in that type of stuff, more than happy to give you access to that because you're on the summit. And it's a series of videos, worksheets, and what else? That's it. We'll get the full training on video for each of these modules. So we've got fast track pitches. So it's how to sell your product or service, and you know how to sell your service in 6 seconds. We talk about getting into the subconscious mind. So a lot of this stuff really, I didn't really cover it today, but a lot of it's about understanding that there's two minds that we've got. There's the conscious and the subconscious. And most of us are walking around trying to sell to people, trying to sell to their conscious mind. We're trying to sell to them, and when we do that, we're selling with logic. And what a lot of this training is around is how to get below the conscious mind and into the subconscious, because the subconscious will completely overpower any logical decision making. I don't know if you've ever think of a good example. Well, buying a house even is a classic example. Most of you will have bought a house, and the logical, you know, your conscious mind will say, all right, we've got, let's say we've got a $400,000 budget, and we're not going to spend a penny over that. Is that all right, honey? And you both agree, yes, that's our budget, blah, blah, blah. Right, what's the criteria for us buying? Right, we want four bedrooms, and we want this, and we want fenced, and we want, blah, blah, blah. And you go through your logical list, and here's the areas we want to live in. And then you start going and looking at houses, and your conscious mind looks at these houses and goes, oh, yeah, it does meet the logical criteria, but I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling it. And then you see some more, and they just don't, these houses just don't do it for you logically. Well, logically they do, but there's something still missing. And then the real estate agent takes you to a house that might be 450 or 470. And she'll probably say to you, look, you, I know it's outside your price range, but just have a look anyway. And so your wife says, well, you know, or your husband says, let's just go and have a look. It, yeah, have you ever had the thing? It won't hurt. It won't hurt. That makes me very nervous when my wife says to me, let's just go and look at a house. It won't hurt to look at it. So you go and have a look at it, and you look at a couple of these 470 houses, and one of them, you just fall in love with them, or your wife falls in love with them, or your husband falls in love with them. And all of a sudden, what happens when someone falls in love with the house? You know, all the logic gets thrown out the window, and it, you know, all of a sudden 470, oh, I'll take an extra, I'll work part time, and it, you know, what, you've got to live a little, and all this stuff, all this logical agreements you'd made in advance have just been thrown out the window, and you end up buying a house, you know, for 20% more than you expected. And that's what happens when emotions take over, and that's what happens when your subconscious mind takes over. And it's ruled by, you know, images and logic. And so a lot of that is what we explain in all these other modules, is how to really communicate to people at a subconscious level. And I'm not saying sort of overpower them with emotion, but that's effectively what can happen when you know how to use this. So it's sales, sort of selling skills for architects. And I think it's about, I think we're offering it for about $300. It's a bargain if you think what you spent on going to architecture school. There's two parts to architecture. There's one, knowing how to do it. I'll give you a tick on that, and then there's knowing how to sell it. So anyway, that's an opportunity for you guys. Are there any questions?
Yeah, we got a couple questions here.
Great.
So first of all, here's a question from Allison, and I have to apologize ahead of time. It's rather rude. She is Canadian. That explains it.
All right, good.
I say that tongue-in-cheek because Canadians are known as being the polite ones. She says, Richard, tell us the benefit of the method, LOL. What's the benefit, Richard?
Well, I sort of did. I mean, the benefit is, let me talk about the benefit of, I don't mind whether you get this training or not. It's something we did earlier in the year, and we produced it, you know, and we've sold it for $1,000. But the benefit is, if you are better at communicating your value, well, here's what won't happen, because here's what I know is happening at the moment, is you're really good at what you do, and you're not winning as many projects as you should be. You're turning up to meet with a client, and you're having a chat with them, and somehow you're missing the mark with them, because you're saying the wrong thing, because you're focusing on the wrong things, you know? And that's the whole point, is if you want your conversion rate to be better, you've got to learn to communicate better. You know, and what happens if you can convert better and you can communicate better, you're going to win more projects. And if you're winning more projects, then you can start to pick and choose the type of projects you want to work on. And that's pretty much it. If I was talking about the benefits of, say, learning to communicate better, it would be, you can, well, there's a couple. You can put your fees up, for one, right? If you're a better communicator, like Zeke earlier on, I showed you an email from Zeke. He was double what the other architect was, but they felt they had better connection with him, and they felt he was better probably because of what he was saying. So you can charge higher fees, and the other one is you'll win more projects, which means you can be more picky. When you've got a few projects to go for, you can just go for the ones that, you know, the ones that make you feel good. So there you go. There's the benefit of work less, earn more, work less, do more fulfilling projects if you get better at selling your service.
All right. Thanks, Richard. Thanks, Mike says Richard is great. Love listening to him. Plus, he's making some very subtle and salient points that are so important. 5 stars. Thanks, Mike, for that. I'm just going to drop that link in there for the Petrie method. If you click on that, it'll take you to this page. I'll show you my screen here. I have a lot of windows open. Let's see. So you should see that here. If you go to businessofarchitecture.com/PM, you can grab that now. And you're just going to see a page like this. If you have any more questions about it, don't want to talk about it too much now, but you know, there's people that went through it here. You can hear what they had to say. There's other information about what's contained in it, because it is a rather, you know, it was 2 days of video broken down into these different modules. So that link's there. Go check it out. If you think that you need a little bit of help in those face-to-face, you know, belly-to-belly kind of interactions of building those clients, I know we've been talking about that a lot today. So
I'd like to just before we go just mention it to all those people here, but some of you may have heard of the Architects Marketing Academy as well. So for those who are interested in lead generation and being involved in more opportunities, just be aware of the Architects Marketing Academy, where it's a much more comprehensive training. This is just a sort of a short, relatively speaking, you know, the Architects Marketing Academy is a 12-month program. So for those who are interested in that type of thing, just be aware of it. It may be something you do now or something you consider for later, but be aware of the Architects Marketing Academy anyway.
All right.
Right, any more questions?
Yeah, we actually have Romero had a good question. Romero, I'm going to unmute your line here if you have sound. Romero, you're open there.
So I have a question. I had a client that came to me 5 years ago. It was this, at the time it was 8 stores. They had no identity. I spent a lot of time with them creating an identity, a new look for them. And that was when I was working out of my garage at my house, you know, my sole practitioner, which is myself. Cool. I did 3 more markets for them. And recently I told him wanting to raise my price because now I have staff. And he ended up comparing my price, found the cheaper architect, and went that way. And I tried using both logical and emotional. I said, well, you know, logically, you know, if you stick up with us, you know, changes will be minimized. We know your system, your store, and your equipment. And it didn't work. And I tried the emotional. I said, well, you know, when you came to me, you had no identity. Now I hear that the stores that I designed for you are the best in your chain. Still didn't work. Any advice for retaining the client? His logic, though, was that 5 years ago, I was doing the projects, and now is my junior staff, which still me because I supervise him, and that was his logic, and I could not convince him otherwise.
Mm. I hear you. So yeah. So what you've tried to do is use a benefit or an emotional story argument. I would just say to you, it's probably the wrong story. So you've taken a guess at what you think might be important, but it hasn't hit the mark with him.
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
The secret thing I'd be looking to do. Not covertly, but I would be interested in what is one of two things I'd be looking for. When I'm talking to them, I would be having conversation, conversational language, you know, just a coffee or so. I don't know if you get face to face with them for a chat, and I'd be trying to find out one of two things. One, what's his hot button? What's the thing that it inspires him about, you know, when he's worked with an architect? What's the one thing that emotionally drives him, if there is one? And what's the one thing that he's nervous about? That he fears, right? In his projects, right? Because if you can find out those things, those are the emotional stories. You don't have to go guessing as to what I should be saying. Draw it from him, right? So, you know, you're probably only 2 questions from getting that, and it might be 2 questions. Might be something like, you know, whether it's me or someone else does the work on this next project, what's most important to you? You know, that what's most important to you in what or how the architect works on this next project for you? What's most important? And he'll give you an answer, right? And then what you want to say to him is, then when he gives you the answer, that's not the answer, right? Then what you want to say is, why is that important to you? Right, then he'll give you another. Then he'll give you. Now, what you're after is really the driver. You're not. He'll give you a superficial answer. Oh yes, I want an architect who's reasonably priced and you know, on time and on budget. He'll give you all the superficial rubbish, right? Then, but it's the why. So why is that important to you, Mr. Client? And he'll say, because, and then he'll start opening up a little bit, because of this, this, and this. And then you say, okay, of those things that you just mentioned there, which one of those is most important? And he'll go, this okay. one. And he'll go, and you'll go, why is that the most important? What will that mean for you if you know, if that happens? And then he'll start giving you the answers that are far more emotional than anything he's given you before, right? He'll then be giving you stuff that if you bring them up again later, this is the difference between being a shotgun shooter and a sniper, right? He's going to show you exactly, by asking those questions, he's going to show you exactly where the bullseye target is. He's going to tell you, and he won't even know he's doing it. Right?
Good advice.
Yeah.
Because he did say he went with a firm to try him out, and I was going to get the opportunity to bid the next job. They actually build about a store every 2 years. But I want to make sure that he comes to me and I'm still in the right price, because now I have overhead, and he needs to understand that.
Yep.
And he's still getting me at the end of the day.
Right. Yeah, of course. Look, and I'm sure he should be using it. You know, but the thing is, as architects, you've got to ask more rounded questions than just picking up the logic. You know, what do you want? How many rooms? What sort of square footage? All this type of stuff. We've got to learn to ask more. What's the best way of saying it? There's more to just getting a brief than getting the raw what do you need type stuff. We need to know the why they want it. And so those questions I said before are like that, they are the X factor that will, they'll find his heartstrings on a positive side. Now the other way is go for the pain point and go, listen, if you do a project and it doesn't work out well, what is it you most fear about a project that could go wrong for you? And he'll say, he'll give you a, well, this is what I, you know, this is what I don't want to happen in a project. This is the worst thing that could happen for me in this project. Or, you know, and then you say, why? Why is that the worst thing? And like peeling back an onion, and he'll give you an answer. And you'll do the same thing again. And what will that mean for you if that happens? And he'll give you his worst case scenario pain point. Right? And when you
Perfect.
Talk to him,
yes.
You know, then you know what he secretly fears. And even if he hadn't thought of it before, now he's seen it. He can't get it out of his head, right? And if you say, when I'm putting my proposal to, you know how you said that this was the best thing that you could get out of a project and this is the worst thing? Here's what I'm including in my proposal. I'm going to include this thing, which is going to help you make sure you get the good thing. And I'm going to put in place this level of service or scrutiny or something, which is going to guarantee you are not going to have that thing that you fear. That's what I'm going to do for you.
Got it.
Now
he did agree for a meeting soon to talk about this, so I'll make sure I try to get those answers now. And when the opportunity comes in a year or so, I'll be prepared.
Yeah. But, yeah, so good luck with that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Very short. Does that
can you see how that might you know open up to get the real criteria, you know, things that you can really get leverage on?
Yes, I totally see it. Yes.
Yeah. And it's so simple when you know once you hear it, you go, oh, it's so simple, it's so obvious. Now I hear it. But that's what we need.
Yes. Yeah, and I do try to listen to the client, but at the same time, you know, because we spend a lot of time on the first store, so to create an identity, I do feel entitled to the design, and he's going to take it somewhere else. So that's the emotional, I guess, part in my point of view that it might have detracted him from sticking with us, that I told him, well, that's my design, and he didn't care. He said, you know what, we pay for it, and that's it. But, you know, it's good away, maybe, and then come back later.
Yeah, well, that's fine, and that's right. But it's a good lesson for you and all architects listening to this is, you know, you think you do a good job, and I'm sure you do, and the clients don't necessarily always value a good job. it's the crazy thing. They don't value the relationship that's built up to the same way you think they should, and then you end up getting hurt and thinking, well, you know, what did I do wrong? Well, the answer is nothing other than you probably didn't. You know, we've got to communicate our value before we get them on board. And here's the big lesson for everyone on this call. You've also got to continue to outline the value to your client while you're working with them. Right? It's just because you got the job doesn't mean they get the value. You've still got to educate them on the value that you're delivering. And you can use the same process here. And for two reasons. One, you want them to come back if they're going to do another project. And two, you want them to refer.
Yes, that's the big thing. Yes.
So they've got to be saying, Romero, my guy Romero, this is how they're going to be told, my guy Romero, you've got to use him, he's brilliant. Here's how he saved me, you know, all these problems, and here's how he got me these results, and I didn't even know until he told me.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
All right, good luck, thank you.